Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now celebrating 5 years of burning up the airwaves.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place.
You're listening to the voice of small business.
This is Dr. Fraser Crane. I'm listening.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. Philippa Games is our guest this half hour, ladies and gentlemen. She's an old friend and a long-term member of our Brain Trust. Philippa is internationally recognized expert in web and technology strategy. She helps companies all over the world to maximize and sustain their return on investment in their online presence, which is what she has been helping us do for the last couple of years that she's been a member of our Brain Trust and what she's going to do today. Philippa, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jim. Good morning.
Good morning to you. And Philippa, ladies and gentlemen, lives in the land of the fruits and nuts, right, Philippa?
Yes.
and I don't think anybody listening has to ask where that is. It's out there on the left coast, somewhere between Mexico and Oregon, and it's that whole area out there. And Philippa, congratulations! You've got a new governor.
Yes, thank you.
Are you excited about it?
Jim, I think we should talk about the internet. And I was always told not to get political.
But you do have some political things to talk about. You want to tell us? You're going to tell us about a law that Governor Gray Davis signed into law recently.
Right. In California, there's a new legislation coming into effect on January 1st as it stands. And reading what I'm hearing about it, it has massive implications for anybody who does email marketing, which is any small business, because email marketing is so powerful. And
email marketing, folks, is my and Philippa's and most people's definition for legitimate opt-in permission marketing. And everything else is spam.
Okay.
Right, Philip?
Now, as I understand the new law, and I want to make really clear that I'm not a lawyer, this is my understanding of what I've read in terms of the analysis. What the law is saying is that any commercial email, i.e. email which is promoting something that I guess you have to pay for, that concerns money, that has not been expressly requested by the person receiving it, even if you already have a business relationship with them, that can be considered spam.
So what about my opt-in subscribers? This week, we seem to have gotten quite a few subscribers from California, people who emailed us and said, please send us your newsletter.
Now, your newsletter is not a commercial piece. It's wonderful. It's very informative. It has a great article. But it doesn't sell me stuff.
Okay, that's you're right. You're right about
now, that. Now, and I'm not sure. See, there are many, many things that I'm not sure about, and I would imagine that this is going to have to be very heavily tested.
What you're saying is that California is pushing the envelope in restricting unsolicited email.
Correct. I mean, what I'm understanding is that supposing you're a business that has sold me something and added me, therefore, to your mailing list, which an awful lot of people have done.
Because in the selling of it online or somehow, you gave that company your email address.
Correct. Now it's being said that the fact that I ordered something from you before does not mean that I wish to receive further promotions unless I have expressly said so.
Right.
And further than that, for instance, if I'm a member of an association or a chamber of commerce and I'm on the membership list, that doesn't mean that they can send me promotions for events that you have to pay for unless I've said so. It's something that I think is going to have to be tested because it doesn't make sense to me. It's going to be hugely labor-intensive. To basically means that anybody with a database needs to go back through that database, establish who's based in California, and go back to them and be real clear that I can send you stuff that's commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the thing that really bothers me is it's not going to save us from all the Viagra ads that we get from just about everywhere else.
You're exactly right.
It feels like it's taking a sledgehammer to crack a nut. However, the penalty is $1,000 per email.
Well, what it's going to do is it's going to put an unreasonable requirement on legitimate marketers, and basically it really won't change the spammers all that much, will it?
Right, and as I say, I don't know how it will stand up. It really, I'm not clear exactly what it means by commercial. You know, it's not clear. Mm-hmm. It also says that the permission is almost certainly likely to have to be written.
Well, and the thing is the reason I'm glad you're bringing this up for us and reporting this for us, Philippa, is that this is a law that's apparently going to take place January 1st. We'll find out more about it. We'll get some more information on this in the weeks and months ahead. But the main thing is we all know California is a bellwether state. And that means what happens in California likely will happen in Arkansas, you know, in over the next 5 years. So it's one of those things that if it's happening in California, it may be happening to you before very long. So we need to know about it. And, of course, many of our audience, Philippa, as you know, do business in California online, if not offline.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a quick break. It's 20 Tales. Stay with us. We'll be right back with our good friend, Philippa Gaines. We're going to talk about 7 strategies for web success. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to check it out when you get a chance and subscribe to my free newsletter, which comes every week by email. Even those of you in California can subscribe. Don't worry, we'll get it to you. And let me remind you, coming up in our show straight ahead, Jeffrey Zabar will join us, and we'll talk about some home-based business and teleworking issues. Sam Norwood will be giving us a report on what's going on out there in the economy. And then Joan Pride will be back with us with the Kiplinger letters to talk to us about the most recent things that Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world. Philippa Gaines is our guest, and she is the cyber speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, that's her website, cyberspeaker.com. And, Philippa, you want to talk to us now about some strategies for web success.
Right. And, Jim, I'm actually a consultant, but I'm also, as you know, a professional speaker.
Absolutely.
And I travel around and do some speaking programs. And I put together recently a new program that I'm using for, you know, business owners and executives around some strategic questions for web success. And, in fact, I just wrote an article on this. And the article is available on my website if anybody wants to read it. It's go to my website, which is cyberspeaker.com, C-Y-B-E-R, and then speaker, and then click on articles. And you can pick up the complete, all of the strategies, because we won't have time to talk about all of them this morning.
There's a great list of articles here, folks, by the way, on her website. Go ahead.
But, you know, what I talk to these people about, because they're not the people who have to make sure that it loads quickly and that everything works and that piece, but they're concerned about it at a higher level. And so I start asking at the executive level questions like, does your website present an appropriate image of your company? Because that's an interesting question to me. I mean, a lot of websites that you go to and you look at them and you get a certain feeling about what the company might be like, and that might be different from what you get in real life. And so, for instance, when I'm doing this program, if you look at, for instance, the Tiffany's website, it's very, very nice, very sophisticated, very elegant, very simple. You go to Nordstrom's website. I know these are corporate examples, but it just really brings it home to people because they all know these businesses. If you go to Nordstrom, then in the real world, Nordstrom's branding is all around high-end customer service,
right,
high quality, and higher prices because of the type of merchandise that they sell. If you go to their site, they sell much lower quality, much lower end. And, in fact, once I brought up their site in my program, and somebody said it kind of looks like Kmart, which is no disrespect to either company.
Right.
But my question is, you know, this doesn't match the image that we have of Nordstrom. And, therefore, there must be a reason why they're doing that. But is it a wise decision to do something that doesn't match the brand that you're trying to create in real life?
Right.
And so that question can be taken and extended to anybody who has a website. If I come to your website, does it give me a feel for your company, for who you are, for your personality, for how it would be to do business with you that would correlate with what I get in the real world?
So if they find you first online, does it give them a good first impression? And if they find you online after they've met you and your business in person, does it reinforce the branding image that they got when they were in front of you?
Right, because I said there's no disrespect to Kmart. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm looking for a store that's like Kmart and has that kind of merchandise, that's fine. But that's not Nordstrom in real life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's to me, it's just an interesting question of what reflects the image and what doesn't, and where and how those decisions are made.
Well, I think you're right, and I think this is one of the things that the owner of the business should really be focusing on, not the bells and whistles, because that's what your managers and your developers, your website developers and all that, that's what they're doing, but focus on the vision of your website as the owner and as the leader of your organization. Make sure that your website has the vision, projects the vision that you want to project for your company.
Mm-hmm. And then another piece of image is also public relations. And most sites don't think about the public relations opportunities that they have. And PR means not only dealing with the fact that there could be bad news about your own company and dealing with that. And again, this can apply to a small business. Microsoft is a great example of a larger site that has a tremendous press center that talked about all of their dealings with the Department of Justice and all of their perspectives on it.
Mm-hmm.
Which gave you their views, even if you didn't agree with them. But, for instance, I was talking last year to a group of residential home builders. And on the plane on the way over to D.C., I had been reading about mold in new construction,
mm-hmm.
which is a really big problem.
Toxic
and
mold.
Insurers are beginning to say that they won't even cover mold. And I said to the home builders, you know, there's bad news in your industry. Lots of people who are about to build a house will read Fortune magazine. That's a similar kind of readership. People know about mold, so how about on your website having a statement right there that says, here's what we do to prevent mold in your new house.
Mm-hmm.
So don't walk away from the bad news, but use your website to come out and say, here's what we're doing about it, and recognize it, you know, and give people the confidence to come to you. And so take the PR and make it spin in your favor.
Mm-hmm. Well said. That's a good idea.
So there's lots of things to think about in terms of image.
Well, and I think that, Philippa, that a lot of people don't think about their website as that. I don't think they think about it as an image extension, as another lever to use to leverage your brand. I don't know what they think about. I mean, I don't know exactly what they're thinking, but I think that they really need to. What I think they ought to think about is that their website is another storefront. Only instead of it being on Main Street in your hometown, it's on Main Street in cyberspace. It's the same. It's presenting the same image that has the same opportunity to present an image, I should say, as your storefront does. And we're going to talk with Philippa Gaines some more about this right after these messages. We're talking about strategies for your website success right after these messages. 10 till. Stay with us. Back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.jbsba.com. Philippa Gaines is our guest, and her website is cyberspeaker.com. And I'd encourage you to go there, folks, and check it out, because there's a lot of good information there that she makes available to you. I'd like for you to know about her availability to you as well in person. She's an outstanding speaker. She knows her business, as you can tell. And so if you need any help with your web strategy, if you'd like somebody to come and speak to your organization about your national organization or your chamber or just your company about how to use the internet to your advantage, I think Philippa would make an excellent choice for you. So check her out there. Philippa, you want to give us a phone number?
Sure, it's area code 831-465-0317.
All right.
Okay. Cyberspeaker.com will do it too.
Let's talk about some more strategies for web success.
All right. Well, one of the other strategies is making sure that you provide really good added value for your customers and that you make it as easy as possible for them to contact you and make sure that all of your processes fit together.
When you say added value, tell us what you mean. Be specific about that.
So that your customers can find everything that they need on your website. For instance, I was just working with a small engineering company, and when I started working with them, under customer support, they had a phone number, and they did have an email where you could send them a question. But they had a lot of different information that was in electronic format in terms of supporting the equipment that they sold. Mm-hmm. Frequently asked questions, you know, this thing isn't working, why not?
Mm-hmm.
And it was that sort of typical place where a lot of the time it could be something really simple. And I was saying to them, why don't you create a little knowledge bank online? Which is just really a posh name for, you know, the frequently asked questions.
Right.
But it's kind of database driven, so that when somebody puts in a question, it will search all the answers by keyword and bring up the most likely answers. It's easy to do, but that way somebody out of state or in a different time zone could go to their site, and if they have a question that's easily answered, they can get it answered without having to wait for a technician to come in.
Exactly.
And in fact, in one of my speaking programs, there was some poor woman there who was supporting people in Hong Kong and Singapore and across Europe, and she started her working day at 3 in the morning and was available by cell phone through 7 o'clock at night, and
wow.
She was exhausted. And I said, do you have this kind of facility on your website? And she just looked at me like I'd given her the biggest light bulb.
Right.
But it can be fairly simple to set up.
It is. It is. It's not that hard. And then over time, you just populate it with more and more questions and answers.
Right. As people
and eventually, and you know, this is a cost-saving thing too, Philippa, and this is kind of what you were hinting at a little bit, is that the more questions and answers that you get up there and the more you direct people to that, the less they have to call in and ask a real human being.
And again, obviously, that means less potential cost savings for the customer,
right,
too, in terms of less long-distance and international calls.
Right, exactly.
But also making sure that it's easy for them to contact you if they need to. I mean, this is more of a basic piece, but, you know, think about the number of websites you go to and you say, I wonder who this is, and you just can't find an address, you can't find a name.
Mm-hmm.
That destroys credibility, but it also obviously doesn't make it easy to do business with you.
Right. All right. What's another one?
And when they do contact you, one of my favorite places to show is actually on some of the airline websites, trying to contact an airline actually via their website and making sure that small things like the form is big enough and doesn't make people feel like you don't really want to hear from them. If you give somebody a really small box where it's really hard to type a message because you can only see 3 words across and 2 lines down, then it's really hard to type a coherent stream of thought.
So we need to give them a little bit bigger box, right?
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you on that. It's almost like they put the box in there and made it smaller to deter you from asking a question.
Right. So as small businesses, the customer relationship is so important. Let's not do that.
Right. I agree with you. All right. What else? We got time for one more.
One more. Make sure, and we've talked about this before, but that your website provides you with a justifiable return on investment, and that goes back to the piece where if you aren't looking at the metrics for your site, the traffic analysis, to find out what ultimately happens when people come to your site, you know, where they leave and where the places where you should be getting some kind of interaction with them and that's not happening. You know, all of the places where things that you want to happen aren't happening. What's going wrong? And if you aren't looking at your metrics, you probably can't tell that really properly. And the metrics are there and they're incredibly valuable information. And so, obviously, as an executive, the website is something you've invested in, and you want to make sure that you're getting a return on that investment.
Right. And, folks, that's something that Philippa and I have talked about quite a bit on the show before, and so you can check that out. And in fact, you can go back to at least one of the archives that we've got that you can go back and check out. Philippa, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.